Hello, it's Deborah Penton. I'm delighted to welcome you here live to Penta Communications, where we are taping at our historic corporate office, the former 1790 House, and now the Penta Building, which is on the National Registry of Historic Places. And joining me today in celebration of National Women's History Month for this wonderful conversation is Christina Nelson Allen. For many of you who do not know Chris, she is a writer, editor, and a town historian, and she wrote The Story of Westboro on the Beaten Path and serves as a local history guide, past president, and a current director of the Westboro Historical Society. She began her public service in Westboro 43 years ago as a library trustee on the committee to build the library addition, and she served 12 years as an elected selectman, focusing her efforts on affordable housing, open space, and water resources. Chris was a founding director and president of the Westboro Community Land Trust and serves as a member of the Land Trust's Education Committee. She was also the founding municipal chair of the 495 Metro West Partnership, a growing, vibrant regional planning group. And for more than 20 years, she served on the Westboro Affordable Housing Partnership. She is now retired from a writing and marketing career at Clark University, where she worked for 23 years in the Communications Office and Department for International Change, Community, and Environment. She moved to Westboro with her husband Peter and their two children in 1973, and she's enjoyed watching the town grow and change over the past 45 years. Chris, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today for this podcast. And, you know, as we sit in our building, which is over 200 years old, it brings us to think about what life was like, not only here in Westboro, but in the region during colonial times. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'd be happy to, and thank you for inviting me today, Deb. Life in colonial times was very hard, particularly for women, because they were the managers of the household, and they were actually carving their homes out of the wilderness where Westboro was. And it was difficult work. And from day dawn and right into the evening times, they had so many duties to do. It was start off early in the morning when they got up and had to light the fire before dawn, milk the cow, and get all the milk in to make into butter and cheese, and then wake the family up with hot water for them to wash. And then they would probably have a lot of cooking to do throughout the day, as well as gathering herbs for remedies and for seasoning. They had to put up all the vegetables and fruits for eating and cure the wild beasts and wild deer that had been brought in by their families. They were also in charge of their children, naturally, and their children had to be brought up as God-fearing citizens in the Puritan Westboro. And this meant that they would be taught very strict moral rules that they couldn't go against. And the women also had to carry on with strict moral rules. Divorce was unthought of, and in fact, married women had very little legal rights. They couldn't draw up a contract or make a will or, of course, hold public office or vote. They couldn't even call their belongings their own in many cases because their possessions were under their husband's rule. They only had their own personal clothes and jewelry that they could call their own. So they were almost not a non-entity as far as legal terms go. But during the days, Her day would be filled with so many household chores. For instance, everything that was needed by the family was produced on the farm. They would have clothing that they had to make. The clothing, of course, would come from the sheep that was shorn and then the wool carded and spun into yarn, or the flax broken down into linen thread, and then that would have to be woven and dyed and sewed into clothing that would no doubt be passed down from many, many people because it was so difficult to do sewing. So just about everything, making soap, making candles, cleaning constantly, and taking care of the sick and the elderly was also an important part of their lives. So their lives were busy from dawn right through an ending till they fell into bed exhausted at night.
It sounds like it was almost both a subservient role on so many levels, serving everyone, putting everyone else's needs first, and in a significant caretaker role from the moment that a woman would wake up until, of course, as you mentioned, she would just collapse from exhaustion at the end of the day. And when do you think things began to shift? Around what time, what period, where do you think that there was any kind of a change with women?
Well, probably around the 1810s, 1820s, when things began to get a little easier. And more people would be coming into town, there would be more merchants, and there would be more opportunities, I guess, to even work outside the house as milliners. And often the women, if their husbands died, they would take on the role of their husbands and tavern keepers and innkeepers. So women got a little more involved, I think, in businesses, milliner shops, and doing things like that.
And so that's really when they started to experience what it would be like to have their independence a little bit more and to utilize their strengths to provide meaning not just to their families, but also to the community.
That's right. They got involved. Women were very involved with the social aspect, at least in the mid-1800s, with all sorts of clubs that they joined for the benefit of the community, not unlike it today with the Women's Club and and other clubs that women are involved in. They had benevolent societies, and during the Civil War, there was a women's sewing circle that made blankets and bandages and put up food and sent it to the Union Army. So that was another outreach that they had.
Yeah, and it seems that the camaraderie and the social groups that these women had back in the 1800s was just so important to their psyche and their morale, because without it, there was that lack of camaraderie. It almost, could breed a loneliness where, you know, when you're constantly serving others nonstop and just making sure that you're providing, this caretaker role, when you're able to engage with others that are in similar situations, it can create a tremendous amount of bonding and shared issues and discussions, and where it's not so shameful to feel, you're exhausted and they couldn't do any more, or they, yearned for the opportunity to have some kind of independence, whatever that might be.
That's right. They met each other perhaps at the meeting, in the meeting house, with long sermons during Sunday, but women would meet, and then also at times when they were doing household chores, they'd get together to perhaps make quilts, quilting bees, and sewing together, knitting, and visiting each other. They spend a long time visiting relatives at different times. But it had been a very lonely life, and they felt quite isolated when the early frontiers. But that did change very well about the turn of the century.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about your book, On the Beaten Path, and just what prompted you to decide that you wanted to write a history book that focused on the town of Westboro?
Well, I had moved to Westboro. One of the first things I did was to wander through the Puritan graveyard in the center of town.
Interesting.
And I enjoyed art, and I saw all kinds of very interesting carvings of death's heads and angels and hourglasses and flowers. And I was wondering very much about the art and the people who had been in the town and were buried there as town leaders. So that began my research into who the people were of the town that founded it. And also my love of art went into what went into Puritan gravestones as one of the first types of American art. So with that beginning, I began writing a little more about the beginnings of Westboro and found out that, of course, it was known for the birthplace of Eli Whitney, but I wondered if it was known for other people as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of research showed that this was not a tiny little sleepy farm town, but actually a very busy merchant town. We had great exports of straw hats and sleighs and shoes, and it was a real hub of activity around the 1830s and 1850s. So there was a story to tell, as is there are always stories to tell.
There's always a story to tell. And you have a story to tell, Chris. You have blazed a trail in your own right. You've raised two children. You worked at Clark for many, many years. In fact, I remember back when you worked at Clark a long time ago, you were a selectman in town and served for many years. How many female selectmen were before you? If you had to count, was it one, two?
Just one. I was just the second one. Female. Paula Skog was the first one, and I came about a year or two later. And it was very interesting because the men were used to just having their own old boys club in a way.
Yeah.
And trooping off together in the middle of a meeting, perhaps, and finding excuses to get together and have conversations that we would insist to be part of as the woman selectman.
And so how did you deal with that? I mean, you were very strong, and you and like I said, you definitely have blazed your own trail in so many ways. So how did you deal with it? Here you are, the second female selectman in the town of Westboro, which is a wonderful achievement, and you're working amongst very conservative men who were used to having an all male leadership team, and so here you are in your how did you navigate through that? How did you do it? And because you were so successful in staying for so many years.
Yeah, I did enjoy it very much. And what I did was I just made sure I knew all the issues inside and out and researched it well so that they knew I did my homework and could ask important questions that needed to be asked. And the men realized that I wasn't going to sit quietly in a corner, that I had my own views and really wanted particular purposes and goals that I had to take place.
Yeah, so you really worked hard. You worked hard at making sure that you knew everything, that you researched, you put in a tremendous amount of time, commitment, and dedication, and that helped you really emerge into not being a female selectman, but being a selectman.
Right.
Exactly. That's right. You also, I know you've done a lot for the 495 partnership, and what I really love is that you were one of the founding municipal chairs. That organization is just, it's just so positive. It's such a positive force here in the region, with numerous issues from transportation to economic development, and it has a really strong body of leadership in its board of directors and those that support it. And so to be one of the founders of that organization must give you a sense of pride in not only just to have founded it, be one of the founders, but also to see it living on and having this great legacy here in the region that's shaping positive change.
Right.
Economically for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So tell us a little bit about your involvement and how that came to be.
Well, it started when we wondered about water and transportation particularly and realized that they had no boundaries as such, that 495, Route 9, and Mass Pike all brought people into the community but transferred into different problems for different towns, but we actually had the same problems with congestion and traffic and how we would deal with that. And water was another big important part because, again, the streams and rivers know no boundaries either. And
right.
To take care of pollution and the actual need for more water and how to look at it in a regional sense was most important. Most of the towns were looking at it as individual towns and looking out for their own views and interests. But we knew it these issues had to be confronted on a regional level, and therefore wanted to get the different towns involved as well as the business people.
And one of the great things about that partnership is it a collaboration. It's a collaboration of many, many towns and using, pulling their resources together, pulling their leadership together to shape change and influence positive outcomes for the betterment of the region as a whole. And I think Paul Matthews and Jessica are doing a great job in their roles. And of course, it's a small entity, but you'd never know it based on the reports that they produce mm-hmm. and the significant support and data and information that they provide to the municipalities to help make really smart decisions on actions that they need to take to go forward.
That's right. And we had started because there was a lot of attention east of 128 and not that much in Central Mass. And we realized that Central Mass was one of the powerhouses, particularly in industry and commerce for the Commonwealth. And we wanted to make sure that people recognized that and saw us as an important entity. And that's why this was founded.
That's really great. And I want to shift gears for a minute because, again, you know, here you are, you're a historian, you have a very deep awareness of what it was like for women who came to this town when it was first established and the challenges that they faced. And you've really honored that in your writings and in your research. And yet, on your own, you have made such significant impacts through the different organizations that you've either contributed to or you've served in a leadership role or founded, and one of which is the Westboro Community Land Trust. And you are a founding director and president, and it's just terrific to have this land trust here in the community, and I'm hoping that you can share with us some of the initiatives that are happening right now and anything on the extensive walking trails and cycling trails that we're all, especially as business owners, very excited about to have along the pathway to offer our employees a great opportunity to just have them for health and wellness and to get out and enjoy the beautiful outdoors, especially how gorgeous our town is with the trees and the beautiful landscaping.
Yes, as we started the land trust because we saw land rapidly disappearing into development and needed to have a balanced view for development and wanted to make sure that open space, which is a real value to the community, was saved and a value to, as we said, the businesses. So we banded together and formed the land trust that is able to buy land and negotiate for land. And we're also very lucky to have open space communities that deeded their open space to us. And early on, it was considered important to have a trail that linked up all the different open spaces in town. And Don Byrne established the Charm Bracelet Trail that is more than 40 miles of interconnected trails. And at this point, it's being developed throughout the town so that it will go in between different towns as well. But we wanted to have it. I know it's running behind some businesses, and employees can walk on it during lunch hour or before or after work and can really get a great boost out of just being outdoors and enjoying nature or getting exercise that they may not have already. But we wanted to have a place for that in Westboro. As equally important to have the development of commercial properties, the development of open space for people all to enjoy.
Yeah, thank you so much for all your hard work on that, both you and Don. And we are so excited because the trail actually connects behind our building. And we actually, when we learned that it was really going to happen, we have a bike rack that is ready to go in the basement. And mm-hmm. we can't wait to secure it into the ground so that our team can, if they're interested, can bring their bikes and enjoy just the beauty of what's behind us. I want to talk a little bit about the 40 miles of trails and where do they go and where do they start, where do they end? What is the ultimate plan so that some of our listeners who aren't aware of it will understand exactly the parameters?
Well, right now, the smaller trails all go throughout the town, hitching up to conservation areas, particularly the Mill Pond and Headwaters Conservation Area by Mill Pond School is connected to the Sandra Pond Reservoir, which is then connected to Mill Pond on the other side of town. And what we're trying to do is also have a bike trail that connects different towns like Southborough and Northborough to Westborough, and we hope that it'll go all the way through Marlborough and east. Is people are hoping to get it all the way into the Boston suburbs, I guess.
That's really neat. So if women from the late 1700s and early 1800s who lived here in Westborough and engaged in the lifestyle that you mentioned in our earlier part of this conversation, could see the town now, could see women in their roles, could see you in your role, what do you think they would think?
I think they'd be astonished, actually, that but perhaps they knew that women were equally as intelligent as men and they had the same ambitions and goals, and that it was society itself that didn't allow them to take the initiatives that they wanted. And there were always some women that would step out and be businesswomen or make their own way in the world. But it wasn't every little girl that could decide that, yes, she can be something and just pursue that. In fact, education wasn't given to the girls very much at all. It was thought of as a waste of time to educate women beyond just basic reading and writing. So they weren't in the professions in the colonial times. But now the sky's the limit for little girls, actually.
That's so exciting. It's really exciting. A couple of days ago, I had a podcast for International Women's Day with a representative from the United Nations in Boston. And we talked a lot about, you know, what was happening now all over the world. And believe it or not, there's still areas where education is deprived to women and young girls. And of course, you know, that's the root of it all. It's the root of it all for everyone, not just women, and for young boys and men. And the education is the fundamental basis of to have the opportunity to get a job and have a lifestyle and to be raised above, up and out of poverty and all over the world. And so I think that if women of yesteryear could see so many female leaders here in Westborough, so many trailblazers in their own rights, and so much leadership in our town of Westborough, in the different commissions and committees and boards, and just seeing so many women juggle motherhood as well, and their very, very fast-paced careers, juggling a family and everything, you're right, they would be absolutely shocked. It would be almost, they'd be mesmerized, because it almost seems like it's impossible.
I think it's delighted. There is a story, though, about Betsy Fay, and she stood out in colonial times. She was ambitious and clever and a brilliant businesswoman, actually. And she was born on Wilkinson's farm in 1747. And when she got to be marriageable age, she decided she was going to earn her own money for her dowry, which was very different at the time. And she decided that she would make straw bonnets and produce them on her farm. So she organized her friends together, and they grew the rye and split it and bleached it and braided it and made it into straw bonnets. And it became a very successful business, but it sort of scandalized the elders in the town that a young woman from a respectable family would go into trade herself. Mm-hmm. And when Eli Whitney Sr. came courting, she told him that she didn't have time because her business kept her too busy and he could wait a while. So he did. He waited 3 years, and they were married in 1765. And she became the mother of Eli Whitney, the inventor, and she continued making hats. And I think that a lot of Eli Whitney Jr., the inventor's ingenuity and entrepreneurship and boldness came from her. She really started the straw hat industry in Westborough, and that continued on into the 1800s and was one of our major exports, and she's credited as starting the industry.
That is a fascinating story. That's so interesting, and it would be great to do something in her honor, just to see someone so enterprising from that years ago, and of course to be married to Eli Whitney,
his father,
and to inspire her son to invent and to go on. And you know, you see a lot of people now, you know, especially young men, and they go off in their careers and they become really successful in their roles. And in a lot of them, you see this in public public careers. And, you know, there's always a nod to their moms. Mm-hmm. And so how interesting would it have been to be to watch, you know, that young man give a nod to his mom for her incredible vision. And that's really, really wonderful. I've never heard that story before. Really? And I love that story. I love that story. That's great.
Yeah, we had some other women who actually lived in town. There was an Anna Weinstock who lived in here in the 1890s, and she was a labor mediator, actually. When she was 14, she went to work in the necktie factory in Boston, and then 5 years later got into leadership and was the business manager for the necktie workers' unions. And then she was named by President Harding to the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service in 1922, and she was the first woman to be appointed to the Department of Labor. Mm. And she, throughout her career, she settled thousands of strikes across the country, particularly one in 1929 of rayon workers, 35,000 striking workers. She got back to the table and mediated a settlement for them. And she went on for a career of maybe 47 years or so as a federal mediator until she died here in 1979. So
wow.
She was a very important woman in labor arbitration.
Very interesting. I would love to invite you back sometime to do a talk on these stories and invite women in the community to really illuminate them and let them know what really happened with some of these women that have made significant strides in a time where you would never have imagined it to be true. So very, very interesting.
Okay.
Thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chris.
It was a delight to be here.
It was
here.
So
Thank
wonderful, you. And we appreciate it and look forward to seeing you again. Thank you very much. Thank you.